Welcome to the Human Centered Leadership Podcast with me, your host, Colm Hay. I have worked in the leadership space for 3 decades, and now I work with organizations and leaders to develop powerful cultures of high value and performance that is built all around their people. We will interview leaders from around the world and at the very top end of their game to explore what emotional intelligence in practice actually looks like and the benefits that it could bring to any team. This is a movement to transform the way that we see leadership and to create powerful cultures where people feel seen, heard, valued and appreciated, and consequently perform to the very best. Why don't you join the movement and subscribe to our podcast? And don't forget to click on notifications to stay up to date with all new content. Today I am speaking to an old friend and a student of mine, actually, from our public speaking program. So I haven't seen Sam for a long, long while, and we bumped into each other on LinkedIn. I have been following his incredible work with educators and teachers, and he has now moved his base of operations to beautiful Lisbon in Portugal, but doing some incredible work. I saw a really good talk of yours, Sam, the other day, of you addressing, I think it was around about 200 teachers at a big school in Lisbon, and the stuff that you're talking about with emotional intelligence and self-care really resonated with me. So welcome to the program, Sam. It's great to see you here.
Yeah, thanks, Cole. And cheers for the introduction. It's great to see you again after a little while. And it's great. Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity.
So listen, we're going to get into your story in a short while and what took you to this pathway. But tell me, what is it that you're up to right now?
So the moment I am running my business from Portugal, you know, 6 years ago I was a secondary school teacher, and now I'm living remote in this amazing country and looking at doing more work with international schools. But yeah, I've got freedom. I live at the beach. I help students and teachers, and yeah, it's crazy to think how far things can change, you know, how far things can grow.
And you're just getting me slightly jealous, not too much, but slightly jealous, if I'm honest. And don't let my wife, in fact, she will be asking, she's, how is Sam? And if I tell her that you're living near the beach, that's it. That you'll have ruined my life.
I'm not living at the beach.
So listen, you've got a really powerful story, and you've just alluded to the fact that a few years ago you were a teacher, but teaching wasn't where you wanted to be originally. Do you want to just share with you what your story is and how you've come about to be the person that you are today?
It's great to look back and always track back, because now I see myself as a leader in coaching and changing education. But yeah, like you said, it's obviously never like that at one point. And I always start my story with me being a 10-year-old child, and I do that because I remember being 10 years old and I remember not feeling myself. Yeah. And feeling very anxious as a kid and just not finding my place. But when you're 10, you always look up to people, and I think I looked up to my dad at that moment, and he was such an inspiration because I was very anxious and shy, and he was very, like, very heavily masculine, very, like, outgoing. And I saw a confident man as being someone who, in this case, fought for his country.
Yeah.
My dad was a soldier, and I looked up to him so much, and I still do. And I made that decision back then to go and join the British Army. That was my dream. And
yeah,
from the age of 10 to 21, all I was, like, soldiering, reading books on being a soldier. Obviously, as I got older, I was doing my fitness classes, fitness tests. And in 2012, I got a letter through the post that changed my life. And this letter was from the British Army. And it was an official letter that I remember picking up, and I was shaking with excitement because I've been waiting for this for so long. Mm-hmm. And I cut through the wax of the letter and read the first line. And it said, "Sam, we'd love to have you join the Royal Anglian Regiment of the British Army." I remember physically shaking with excitement.
I know exactly how you feel, because I remember when, you know, I was 10 years old when I wanted to be a police officer, and I applied to like 26 police forces, like 26 different rejections, and that 27th letter, and it was an old-fashioned letter, and I remember opening that, and I remember how I felt when they said, you know, we're pleased to accept you.
It's just like your childhood dream, and whatever your dream was as a kid, you know, people have got crazy dreams as children, you know, typically like, I'm being an astronaut, or go to the moon, or whatever, but that was my going to the moon, you know, that was like, I'm going to make my dad proud.
Yeah.
But then, which I didn't know, the universe, life, whatever, throws you a curveball. And a few weeks after this, I had some challenges with my health. And I didn't really know what was going on.
Mm.
But I got a diagnosis for a condition. And I didn't think this would stop me. But 2 weeks after I got accepted, I got another letter. And this one, I remember opening this letter, I was not shaking with excitement because I wasn't really expecting this. I'd already got in. So I was like, what's this other letter from the army? And I picked this one up and I cut through the wax, read the first line. And in the moment, my whole world just fell out underneath me.
Mm.
And the first line said, Sam, you know, due to the fact you've been diagnosed with Crohn's disease, you can no longer become a soldier. And Crohn's for me, people think it's just like an immunity condition, and it does affect that, but it's something that can really rob you of your energy, your zest for life. It can make you feel really, really weak. And I'd been feeling this, but at the same time, I was mentally I was so driven. I was like, it doesn't matter what my body is saying. But ultimately it wasn't good enough to join the armed forces. And it was a huge turning point.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I was so... I physically remember collapsing onto the floor in a ball, like full baby fetal position, and just crying my eyes out. And it was all because I built this whole assumption that I had to do this. And I wasn't doing it for myself. I was purely doing it for my dad. But the thing that always blows my mind with this is that he never sat me down on his knee and said, son, I need you to be a soldier and, you know, make me proud.
Yeah.
It was just an assumption that I took on that was so damaging, because hindsight's a wonderful thing. I've gone on to do some really, I think, things that are bigger than, are more aligned to me than being a soldier.
Yeah.
But I was sold on this whole belief that I had to do that. And we follow our parents sometimes. I know it's not the same for you, because I don't think that was the case for your police career. Probably definitely not. But my dad was a soldier and my mum was a primary school teacher. And I just did teaching because I had no other option. I was working at M&S coffee shop.
It was a case of, I can't follow dad anymore, so I'm going to follow mum, right?
Yeah, maybe it was a case of trying to get their approval. I don't know, or just, I did get pushed into teaching for sure. My parents were like, look, you can't work at M&S coffee shop your whole life. Not there's anything wrong with that, but you know, I've just got my degree, you know, and the whole line at the time was, do teaching for 2 years, it'll give you some skills and you can do what you want. But learning to teach was an emotional, dramatic, but also beautiful thing I did.
But then teaching, when you got into it, wasn't quite the smooth road that you expected it to be.
No, I mean, teaching's tough. And it's a hard job because you've got a lot of expectation from parents, from students, from managers. And when you're straight in it, it's really, you don't have all the skills. You do a year of training, but you're chucked in and it's like the culmination of, if you build a house on weak foundations, and I believe, looking back, my house was built pretty weak because I didn't really want to be in the job at that point. I'd had all the failure, the army stuff, all this, you know, everything that holds, we're all connected with childhood trauma in some way. So I didn't have good foundations. If you haven't got good foundations and you start teaching, it just heightens everything you're experiencing. So I'm feeling a little bit anxious. Oh, put me in a room with 30 kids. And I've got to teach 150 students a day, it's going to get exaggerated. So for me, the feelings of failure, let down, it started to really impact my mental health. And it was this constant over, it was constant, started just with thinking. I just couldn't get out of my brain. It was like a washing machine.
Yeah.
And that led to then I couldn't sleep at night. And that was going on for weeks, half an hour to an hour. I remember marking history papers at 2 a.m, then going to teach. And then it got to the point where I was being almost pinned down by someone.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get out of bed. And that was the first time where I was like, this is really affecting me physically. Mm. And it was tough to go back to that point. And then it was the moment where I literally had not slept for days, maybe half an hour to an hour. I hadn't been to school, but I made it in on this day. I walk into my year 11 class, and they're a lovely group of kids. There was 30, 16-year-olds. It was one of my first groups. And there's a great girl at the class, front of the class, called Susie Clark. And she looked at me dead in the eye, almost like she knew what was going on. And she said, "Sir, are you okay?" It was that question. And I responded with the usual response of, "Fine. Yeah, I'm fine."
Mm.
Inside, I was very, very broken. And I didn't know how to express myself. And in the moment she asked me that, our bodies are the best almost detectors, aren't they? And I started welling up with tears.
Mm.
I always share with audiences, like, it's feelings inside, not expressed. So we say, like, fine and not bad is a bit of like a lie, isn't it? To really get people off our backs. We don't want to share. It's like, no, keep my emotions in. Don't let me see the real, don't want you to see the real me.
And I guess there's also that masculinity kind of thing going on as well, you know, big boys don't cry, and, you know, you got to hide your emotions and all of this kind of stuff that we're waking up to now, aren't we?
Yeah, I was big on that. I was, you know, big into sports, rugby, football and cricket. And it was, you got shunned, you know, and bullied and abused if you showed weakness. You know, boys don't show emotion. Man up, pull your socks up. But it led me to the point of crying in front of a group of kids because I couldn't express myself. I didn't know how. No one taught me emotional intelligence. No one taught me how to, like, check in with myself. And it led me to basically having that emotional breakdown in front of the kids. But that was, looking back, you have those key moments in your life. That was a key moment for me of a turning point of, like, I have to get this sorted. But I didn't know how. Luckily, my friend knew someone who was called a coach. I was like, isn't that for rugby or cricket? And now this is a coach for your mindset and how you felt. And this was the 23rd of April, 2015. I remember it was a transformational day. It was the first time I ever opened up to anyone about how I felt.
Mm.
And this guy wasn't, I don't know, Buddha, Gandhi, Jesus Christ, Tony Robbins. He wasn't anyone like... He just asked me some questions and gave me silence. That was the most amazing thing about this. He just was there for me.
And that must have taken you on this incredible inward journey of realization. So where are you right now? So, you know, you've obviously left teaching, but you still have this passion for teaching. You understand where teachers are coming from and the burdens that they might bear. So what is the work that you're doing with teachers right now then, as a result of all of your own life experiences?
Yeah, well, all the stuff that I'm doing now, and what I've created a business off the back of this, that first pain point called Student Breakthrough. So I had my coaching experience, changed my life. I was like, well, we need more of this in schools. I'm going to work with kids. And that's what I did. I worked with kids for about 2 or 3 years exclusively.
Yeah.
And that then fed into teachers asking me to train them in what I do. And again, I was saying yes, I was taking opportunities. And I've created a program called the Educators Coaching Academy, which revolutionizes emotional support in schools through coaching. But if I go back to myself in 2014, 2013 as a teacher, man, if I had this program, it would have been the life raft.
Yeah.
You know, it really would have saved me and maybe would have kept me in the job. It would have definitely helped me deal with my emotions, express myself. So everything I'm doing now is not fixing, but is supporting Sam 10, 11 years ago.
One reason why I love these conversations is that, and thank you so much for being so open, Sam, with your story. But what I love about these conversations is that we get to experience the insights of different industries And teaching is like such an important profession. And I know this is a highly pressurized profession. What is your take on where teaching is right now? You know, what is it? What's life like for a teacher? My own wife's a teacher, so I have some level of insight. But from you having gone into so many schools, speaking to so many educators, what's life like?
So I left the classroom in 2018. I went back to my school last year to do a talk. And it felt like the Dementors from Harry Potter had come in and almost sucked the life out of... I just don't remember it being that stagnant and everyone a bit flat. The kids are flat, the staff are flat. And it's not their fault. Yeah, there's lots of budget cuts. We've had seven education secretaries, I think, in the last... It's been literally like a revolving door with that. So it's been not much stability. But really, and then you've got things like COVID, which, again, like I was saying about, you know, massive impact, but it was already a struggling system. And then you drop in like a global pandemic, and then teachers gave so much of themselves. I mean, I was unbelievably grateful I wasn't a teacher in that moment. Mm-hmm. But really, it needs that, if you want to use the Harry Potter metaphor to carry on, we've had the Dementors sort of sucking the energy. We need, like, there needs to be a Patronus that comes across that lake, like the, and it can be us uniting together and creating a system on strong foundations. But it's pretty tough out there, you know, like 42% of teacher training is down. So people aren't coming to teach.
People aren't even joining, you're saying?
People aren't joining, yeah. So recruitment is down 41% in teacher training, right? So, and then 40,000 people leave. So the churn and burn of teachers has not changed. 40,000 people leaving teaching, that's never changed. It's been like that for decades. The challenge we've got now is that...
not enough people are coming in.
The quote-unquote fresh meat coming in at the top we've got this way out of kilter. So kids are being taught by non-specialistic specialists, you know, and we want... my favourite quote, it's easier to build strong children than to repair broken adults. But if the children are being taught by non-subject specialists who are themselves broken and struggling, then we're not going to just get a generation of students who are falling behind.
I mean, that's quite scary when you think of it. But we hear similar statistics when we talk about the healthcare industry or even policing. And I think there's something fundamental within the public sector, certainly here in the UK, where, you know, I think a lot more work needs to be done. And I know that we've had a lot of talk around, you know, pay and industrial action across all sorts of sectors around pay. But I think it's more than just pay, don't you? I think there's something around, there's another word that we very often associate, it's pay and conditions. And for me, the conditions part is actually quite important. This is about how does one feel in the organisation or the environment that they're in. What are you hearing from teachers? I mean, you get to speak to teachers. What are you hearing about the environment that they're in right now?
I always say this. One of my best performing posts on LinkedIn was the statement. The first line was, teachers do not want to be rich. And they don't. Yes, they need to be paid alongside inflation. Yes, they need to be able to provide for their families. I totally understand that. But no one goes into education and probably policing and probably the healthcare system to make millions, multi-six figures. They go in there because they're the ultimate caregiver. But the caregivers need amazing conditions. You know, they're overworked, they're overstretched. And if we can fix that stuff, I believe, like, I've got a colleague. Here's an example. A colleague of mine I started with, she was there for 10 years, became head of sixth form, was on a fairly decent amount of money for teaching. You know, a very high level. Probably hit her glass ceiling already. She left the classroom to take a 15 grand pay cut. And I remember speaking to her and I said, she's got to commute to London, which is like an hour and a half. So she's still got to commute. She said this, and I get to work from home one day a week. And it just, her eyes like lit up as like, this was like some magical, you know, world that exists. And that's what we're challenged with now. All teachers' friends, they work from home, they got flexible working. You can't do that as a teacher. But there needs to be an element of, we need to be able to create something new and the conditions it starts with. I don't think pay is the main thing. Yes, people need to be paid the rate, like I said, but we've got to improve things, the workload, the management, and how we make, love our teachers. You know, teachers have been dragged through the mud in the press. We need to love our teachers. They're the profession that teaches all other professions.
We're living in this very populist kind of world, aren't we, Sam Wright, at the moment, where on social media, It's very easy to troll people and industries, and also we've got politicians who find it all too easy to make populist statements against one sector or another sector. And I completely get where you're coming from. I've seen it with the police service. I've seen it with the healthcare sector. I've seen it with teaching. I've seen it with so many industries where it only takes one politician to say something demeaning of that industry, and they don't actually have an understanding of the impact that it has on thousands of people in that industry, particularly in the public sector, where it tends to be very vocational. Are you hearing any of that coming through?
You do hear that. And again, why do people not want to teach? Because the profession has been dragged through the mud in the press and in the politics. But it's right, it always comes down, it always cracks me up that the people making these decisions, you know, the very head of the Department of Education, I never taught anything. They've definitely never taught in a state school. They're more likely to have gone to a public school or a private school than a state education. And, you know, why isn't someone who's been there, done it, been in the trenches, made calling the shots than the general miles back from the front line? You know, you need to experience this stuff. You need to know what it's like to teach 30 kids, 15 of them are on the SEND register or SEND, so they've got special educational needs. You've got the pressure of all these new exams. And 2019, when Gove changed the examining system, we went to numbers. That was another big, big catalyst for people losing their motivation for the profession. They just added, in essence, loads more work, made everything harder. And again, the students that are struggling, the teachers that are struggling, just exaggerates that. And it's not a happy place. 2 million, or is it 20% of school-aged children? Sorry, 20% of school-aged children currently do not go to school.
Really?
They're being homeschooled. They are, we used to use this horrible phrase called school refusing, which basically means they've either got mental health challenges or they're, like I said, the parents might be homeschooling them. So if the system was flourishing, kids would be in school. The homeschool movement's getting stronger and stronger because parents are just like, you know, it's quite tough in the UK to homeschool. In other countries, it's easy.
So what's the growth? I mean, I find that quite shocking. Like 1/5 of all children are being homeschooled. What's the growth rate on that? You know, how much has that changed over the last few years? Has it significantly increased or what?
Yeah, significantly increased. And again, COVID is a big catalyst for that. But also parents are realising there's so many challenges with the educational system, and even what we teach is a bit is outdated. You know, we're teaching stuff that I don't believe is necessary. We've got the role of AI coming into the classroom. There's so many changes, but we're very strict. We've done it this way for so long, so we're not gonna bring in any new ideas. But we need to be all united together to create something that is flourishing. And young people are struggling. They need an arm around them. You know, a lot of schools are like, you're not getting in. This is the challenge. You know, you should be in school. But for some students who've been waiting 2 years for a CAMHS appointment for their mental health condition, you know, they're broken kids, man. Like, they need some love. Like our teachers do. Our schools need a lot more love and attention.
So what does that look like for you? You know, you talk about teachers need love, kids need love in school. What is it? What could we introduce? If I was a head teacher, I was talking to a head teacher on the program only last week, and a very inspiring gentleman. But what do you think are like the key things that could be done in education right now to inspire teachers to be more energized, more involved, and happier in their workplaces?
This is the thing. It's so easy for me just to say now something that's transactional. Okay, so what I do, we're gonna bring in more coaches to coach teachers. We're gonna allow more students to have access to mental health support. Right, transactional. So it's all transactional stuff. Mm. If you want to change things, it has to be transformational. It has to. And the problem we've got is we just focus on the short term, you know, sticking plasters. That looking at the what's really going on here.
Yeah,
you know. During COVID, here's an example of improving mental health. During COVID, we went from teaching 4 topics at GCSE history to 3. Now, this might not mean much to you, Cole, but basically the workload and the amount of marking, the amount of stuff the kids have to learn has been reduced by about 20%. Yeah. So straight away, the kids are still learning a load here. But the pressure's off a little bit. We can create a more lot of learning. The kids have got more chance to connect with their teacher, to ask them things. So why I share that is because that's something transformational, cutting back the amount we teach, all right? This curriculum bloat. It's like it's ridiculous what we teach and how much we teach. It's stupid. So it's easy to say something transactional, like, yeah, let's, you know, do this top-down stuff. But if we can change like the curriculum, what we teach, our methods of assessment, then that's going to make more transformational change.
And here's the other thing. There's so much focus on technicalities in so many industries, not just in teaching, but there's so much focus around technicalities, but very little focus or time even to allow, for example, the young people to learn life skills, communication skills, interpersonal skills, emotional intelligence skills, and similarly for teachers and staff. So I think, you know, one of the big frustrations for me, and I see this in the education sector, because there's so much crammed into either the curriculum and the workload for the teachers, there's literally no space left for us to teach them these incredibly valuable skills that will take them forward in life or make their job as a teacher that bit easier.
I use it, the example, the metaphor. So what I do, I've got a great program. It's proven. It changes the lives of students and teachers. And I want you to imagine if someone's drowning at sea, all right, and the waves are crashing over them, and you're there next to them with a life vest, right, and you're about to give them the life vest, but they're so swamped, they can't even see that you're there. And it's the same for teachers. You can be offering the greatest program in the world, but they're on survival mode. You look, think about Maslow's hierarchy needs, you know, they're not self-actualization at all, they're the very highest one. They're trying to get their basic needs met in some ways. And how do you try and help someone that cannot open their eyes for the help because they're just trying to make it through each day?
Then that's your job, right? That's the mission.
That's my job, yeah.
So I have high expectations of you. And I think what you're doing is a very, very important role. And, you know, the mission that you're on, I think, is a very worthy mission. And if I just imagine what schools could be like if our teachers are just, even if they're just 10% happier in who they are, what they're doing, where they are, then imagine the impact that we could have on the education. And this is fundamental to leadership, isn't it? Leadership is all about the ripple effect. Leadership is all about, how do I impact on the next person? And am I creating leaders of the future? And I think the work that you do is about helping teachers to become better leaders. And as a consequence of that, they create leaders in the students that they teach. And really, it really is as simple as that for me. So listen, Sam, if there's a head teacher listening somewhere, and I hope they are, how would they reach out to you to have further conversations about the great work that you do?
And Cole, what you just said there was, you summed up beautifully. You know, it's all just a small step, isn't it? If we can get people 5, 10% firing, then the ripple effect is huge. But if you are a head teacher that wants to create a ripple effect, the best way to get about this is by looking at the website, which is ecatraining.com.
ecatraining.com.
Yeah, on there you'll find loads of stuff about our work with schools. There's testimonials, there's our programs. And, you know, we're here for the long haul. We are pumped up, we're passionate about this transformation. But at the moment, bringing more love, empathy and compassion into those who are the most important people in our society, in my opinion, one of our teachers.
I love it. I love that you've got such incredible passion to make real change you know, in a very, very important sector. And, you know, it's similar to the passion and that we have on our mission with human-centered leadership to just create that ripple effect. It's that, you know, just help to just overcome that inertia and build a bit of momentum. Pointing in the right direction type of thing. So Sam, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. Thank you so much for sharing so candidly, and I hope that you know, the listeners will have picked some elements from this up and think, okay, food for thought. Thank you so much, Sam.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please do subscribe and click on notifications for new content, and of course connect with me on LinkedIn. Take care, have a great day.